I'm your host, Valerie Tirico. Today we're going to be talking about hospital mergers. In 2010, Seattle's Swedish Hospital announced an affiliation with the Catholic Healthcare Corporation, Providence. Today, Swedish is a division of Providence. In 2012, Catholic Peace Health obtained a contract to build the only hospital in the San Juan Islands. These two incidents are part of a broader trend. An increasing number of Washington counties have only hospitals that are affiliated with or run by religious organizations. That includes the clinics and affiliated labs. What does that mean for patients and for doctors? In Catholic hospitals, care is dictated in part by a set of religious directives that are approved by the bishops. Here with us tonight to talk about this is Monica Harrington, who is the founder of CatholicWatch.org. Thank you for joining us tonight.
Great, Val. Thanks for having me.
Or what are hospital mergers more broadly?
With the Affordable Care Act, hospitals and medical systems are under pressure to consolidate. They need to have record systems that work across multiple systems, et cetera. So there's a larger trend for industry consolidation. And the interesting thing about that is here in Washington State, we started with a large number of Catholic healthcare systems. And so as they consolidate and become more powerful, it means that the Catholic presence, the Catholic-controlled hospitals here in Washington State, become more powerful and their reach expands.
9 or 10 counties will have only Catholic-affiliated healthcare systems by the end of this year, if all of the affiliations are approved. Is that right?
Right. I don't know the specific number on counties, but what's interesting is by the end of the year, the American Civil Liberties Union estimates that 47% of the hospital beds in the state will be subject to the control of a Catholic bishop. And what that means is that if the hospital mergers and consolidations that are now on the books, now pending, all go through and there's a Catholic partner, that's what we're likely to face. And that's just unprecedented. It's not happening anywhere else in the country at this very high level.
Mergers among businesses happen all the time. It's a part of kind of streamlining and getting efficiencies out of the system. I think one of the examples is Ace Hardware Stores, you know, where there used to be a lot of little mom and pop hardware stores, and now many of them are franchisees of a bigger chain so they can take advantage of supply lines and things like that, shared marketing. Isn't that just the same thing happening here?
Well, it's really interesting. I wish it were just about efficiencies, but really what it's about is increasing the span of control for the Catholic bishops and the healthcare policies that they direct.
That sounds kind of paranoid.
Well, it would be paranoid if it weren't for the fact that real women are paying with their lives and with their fertility. And
so that's a big allegation. Can you tell me what you mean by that?
Sure. In Arizona, just a couple of years ago, there was a woman who was going to die if she didn't get an abortion. And she went to a Catholic hospital, and the nun there, who was in charge of the ethics committee, decided that an abortion would be appropriate. And so she got her abortion. And everybody agreed that the abortion was necessary to save her life. Well, the bishop in the area disagreed and said that her life, she should not have had an abortion. Her life shouldn't have been saved. And a lot of people, I think, read about that story and they thought, oh, it's just one crazy bishop. But what later happened is that all of the Catholic bishops across the United States affirmed that decision, saying that that woman's life should not have been saved, she shouldn't have been granted an abortion. And that's why you have cases like what just happened over in Ireland, where this poor woman who understood what was happening to her was begging for an abortion, and she couldn't get one, and she died while the world watched.
Are they really going to go with what the bishops say? Not all Catholics agree with the bishops.
Oh, as a matter of fact, most Catholics don't agree with the bishops. And that's really not the point. The fact is that the bishops actually have control over these hospitals because all of the moral and ethical decisions ultimately are subject to their review. And in years past, when you had nuns running the hospitals kind of independent of the bishops, you might have what some people think of as feisty nuns, and they would guarantee that certain services would be offered. Well, the nuns are dying out. The average age of a nun in America right now is over 70. And the bishops are asserting their control And the people who are taking over these hospitals report to a board of directors and to the local bishop. And so if you're making millions of dollars running a hospital and part of your salary depends on making the bishop happy, what are you going to do?
You really think that's what it's about?
Yeah, in some cases, absolutely. But it's also about very conservative religious people believing that they have the right to impose their morals and values on other people. I have no problem with the Catholic bishops. They can believe whatever they want to believe, and they can shout from the bully pulpit in the churches on Sundays or whenever they want to and talk about what people should do. That absolutely is protected by our Constitution. The problem becomes when they run hospitals and medical facilities that the rest of us fund and impose their moral view on those institutions.
But you're talking about Catholic hospitals. Don't they fund the Catholic hospitals?
It would be nice. The fact is that all hospitals right now, government funding makes up a huge proportion of their funding. So if you look at a typical Catholic hospital today, by far a huge percentage of that funding comes from the government. The next chunk comes from private pay patients, the types of people who work for, through their insurance companies, so the types of people who work for Microsoft or Boeing or Amazon, etc. And then the rest are the people who pay out of pocket, and then there is a set of people who can't afford to pay their bills. And in fact, all of the other people, the government, the private pay patients, all of us subsidize the care for those people. So the actual percentage that comes through Catholic-specific coffers is tiny, tiny.
Somebody said 5% or less, is that
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I believe it's significantly less than 5%. And if you actually run through the numbers, again, it's a small fraction. And in many cases, what's interesting is that donors here in Washington State have donated to these institutions because they support health care. So up on San Juan Island, for example, the community up there raised $10 million for a hospital. And I've spoken to a lot of those donors, and most of them had no idea they were funding a Catholic institution that was going to impose Catholic values and moral beliefs on patients regardless of what they believe.
I would guess that's really surprising to most people to hear that the funds aren't actually coming from the Catholic Church. People think of Catholic hospitals as Catholic charities, essentially.
Right.
Right? As that's what religions do. They do good in the world. They kind of take in money. They give money to poor people. They give money to sick people. You know, the kinds of people that Jesus said to take care of. And now what you're saying is that in actuality, these are public funds.
Right.
Coming through publicly approved accommodations and
right.
and intended to serve the general public.
Yeah, it's absolutely stunning to me. I own property up on San Juan Island, and each year on my tax bill there is a line item that I pay to support the hospital up there. Well, that money, 95% to 97% of the tax dollars that I pay in any given year get passed directly on to Peace Health, and Peace Health gets to decide what policies it wants to implement in running that hospital. And
isn't that against the law?
Absolutely. It's totally against the law. It's against the Constitution.
What does the Washington State Constitution say about this?
So in Section 11 of the Washington State Constitution, it's amazingly clear. What it says is that no public money shall be used for the support of any religious establishment. And what's fascinating to me about this is so many people who've been working in the healthcare field and who've been working as patients' rights advocates actually have not really been aware of the full force and power of Section 11 of the Constitution. And we are now in the process of making our public officials very aware. And the American Civil Liberties Union, the ACLU, is very active. We've got a constitutional crisis. And it's time for people to address it.
Wouldn't a lot of people say, though, these aren't actually religious institutions? They're just hospitals.
Well, the Catholic hierarchy, the bishops, the cardinals, the Catholic hospitals themselves, what they actually call themselves are Catholic healthcare ministries.
Catholic healthcare ministries.
Right. So I get to fund a Catholic ministry. which is really interesting to me, having grown up Catholic and understanding what that means.
As someone who grew up Catholic, give me some context.
So I am the eighth child in a very Catholic family. My mother was head of the Altar Society. My father taught law at a Catholic university and had a private family law practice. They happened to be very progressive Catholics, so my father wrote the no-fault divorce law in Oregon, and my mother was quietly pro-choice because she knew women who died from botched abortions. I saw the impact of Catholic policy on people of my parents' generation, and I was determined that it wouldn't happen to me.
What were some of the impacts that you saw?
Well, as it turns out, my mother didn't want eight children. In fact, she was pregnant 10 times in the first 12 years of her marriage. And the reason she was pregnant 10 times is because, according to the culture in which she grew up, and she was born in 1916, a woman was not allowed to use birth control. And so my mother tried the natural family planning method that the Catholic doctors recommended. And as a result, she was pregnant 10 times in 12 years.
That just sounds like a nightmare.
You know, well, Mom at times said that we were a nightmare, but the truth is, my mother, it wasn't the life that she wanted. And she should have had a choice about that. As the eighth child, I'm very comfortable saying that my mother should have had the right to decide to have fewer children.
I'm the oldest of six children, so maybe as an eldest, it's easier to say, you know, it would have been great if Mom had access to contraception.
Right.
Right. But I remember, it wasn't until I was a mother mm-hmm. that I had two thoughts. One is, wow, it's entirely possible that Mom was sane before she had all of us.
Right.
And the second thing, though, more seriously, was I thought, what would Mom have done with her life? What might she have been?
Right.
She was a nurse. Maybe she wanted to be a doctor. She said when she was younger that was a dream of hers, right? I mean...
Right. And I think my mother was a brilliant woman. She astonished me with how smart she could be about certain things. I had a career in the high-tech industry, and my mother was so well-read on what was going on in the technology industry. She loved talking about it. She was curious about everything I did. She could have had a different life. And I'm not going to say a better life. It would have been a different life. But ultimately, I feel like that choice, that decision is up to a woman.
Mm-hmm. But we're talking about contraception, and we're talking about hospitals. And I think most people would say, hospitals, you know, hospitals don't hand out contraception. So really, are we off topic?
Oh, gosh. It's really interesting. Well, it's important to understand that when we're talking about hospitals, it's almost a proxy for the broader healthcare system. So up on San Juan Island, that hospital is actually a hospital/medical center that sees people for primary care needs, for basically it should be for all of their healthcare needs.
So this is the Catholic Peace Health Hospital that was built on San Juan Island two years ago.
Right, in Freddie Harbor. It just actually opened this last November. And so that's a hospital where people would expect to get their primary care, their urgent care. They can do overnight hospitalization in, extraordinary circumstances. So when we talk about hospitals, what we're really talking about are these larger hospital networks, the hospital systems. It mm-hmm. just turns out that the way our medical system has evolved, hospitals are the hub of the system. So when those go Catholic, what typically happens is that the labs around them go Catholic, the physician practices, there's a requirement that they honor the directives in order to get privileges, etc. And up in Bellingham last year, the Catholic bishop asked the Peace Health folks to quit doing lab tests for Planned Parenthood patients.
Did they quit?
No, they didn't. So that request was relayed to the CEO of the Planned Parenthood up there, and she and her board stood up and said no. And it's my understanding that that's the first time in the U.S. where the head of a Planned Parenthood has just said no outright to a demand from a Catholic bishop, or
is
to
this
a
Bishop
request.
Sartan? Is that how you say his
yes,
name?
Yes.
The same one who's been assigned to crack down on the nuns?
Yes, and so he's our bishop here in Seattle. And so when people look at this situation in Washington State, they have to understand that we have the guy who's been tasked by the Vatican with cracking down on the nuns. And if anybody thinks that this this archbishop isn't going to enforce those rules over time. I suspect he's a very smart man and very determined in what he's going to do. He took a long-term view, I think, of the whole Providence, Swedish situation. And I expect that to continue to transform over and become more Catholic over time. But they're very purposeful about what they're out to do. And what they're out
What are they out to do?
They're out to control healthcare policy in across the country through their ownership and control of Catholic healthcare systems.
So what's their end goal? You mentioned directives earlier.
Right. So the directives are really interesting. There's a 43-page document called the Ethical and Religious Directives for Catholic Healthcare. And in this document, there are prescribed rules for how everybody who works for a Catholic institution has to operate. And these rules...
No abortions, right?
Right. They forbid no contraception.
But yeah. Most Catholics use contraception.
Yeah, 98% of Catholic women use contraception. So the interesting thing to me is that these Catholic bishops are trying to impose their rules through the healthcare system when they can't get their own flock to agree with them on healthcare matters. My view is, bishops, concentrate on your own flock. Talk to them however you want to. Reach out to them as they go to Mass, etc. You can say whatever you want. It's a free country. You can express your religion however you want in church and in the public square. What you cannot do is impose your rules through publicly funded institutions.
What are these rules? Give us some examples.
Right. So we've talked about no contraception, no vasectomies, no tubal ligation, which is the most common form of permanent sterilization for women.
And that is something that happens in hospitals, because the best time often is when a woman has a child, has just given birth, and she knows she's finished, right?
Right. So about one in 10 childbirths, the woman will decide that she wants a tubal ligation at that point. So it's a very common thing that's done just after the delivery of a baby. And it makes sense, because you don't want to have to do a separate surgery in order to do a tubal ligation.
So what happens if she has a baby at Providence?
What now happens is a woman has to arrange for a second surgery at a non-Catholic facility. So it's really outrageous. And that's not even the most outrageous.
What is the most outrageous? Keep going.
Yeah, so to me, let's talk about the very special directive against extrauterine pregnancies.
So ectopic pregnancies.
Right.
So this is a pregnancy that's developing in the fallopian tube. It can't live.
Right, it's non-viable.
If it continues to grow, it can rupture and kill the mother, right?
Right. The consequence of an ectopic pregnancy that isn't dealt with medically is typically it's the death of a woman. Ectopic pregnancies are very, very dangerous. And in fact, it was the danger of ectopic pregnancies that caused the CEO up in Planned Parenthood to basically say, no, you have to do our lab tests, because you own the only lab in this area, for a lot of reasons that the state actually supported.
And they had to know whether a woman had a life-threatening pregnancy.
Right, because time is of the essence. You have to deal with that right away. And the standard treatment for a woman who has an ectopic pregnancy is to administer a drug that essentially flushes the non-viable embryo from her body. That is the standard prescription. But it's not what you'll hear if you go to a Catholic hospital that follows the directive strictly. So what those Catholic hospitals do is they tell you, oh my gosh, I'm sorry, you have an ectopic pregnancy, it's very dangerous, now we have to take out your fallopian tube.
You have to take out your fallopian tube?
Right. So they don't even tell a woman that there's another option. What they do is they arrange for surgery. She goes in, she comes out, one of her fallopian tubes is just gone. And most women have no idea what just happened to them. They're feeling grateful because their lives were saved. They don't know that if they'd gone to a secular facility,
they could have just had an injection?
Right. And they'd have both of their fallopian tubes.
So their body would actually be intact.
In effect, what's happening in Catholic hospitals to women in ways that none of us can see is that a medical problem that can be dealt with very easily with a drug that doesn't require surgery, doesn't require essentially ripping out a part of a woman's body, in a Catholic hospital that gets transformed into a surgery where a fallopian tube is removed.
That, I mean, it just sounds crazy.
It is
honestly
crazy.
Sounds crazy, because because you're talking about an embryo that could never grow into a person. If you believe in a God, you have to believe that God didn't intend that embryo to grow into a person, because it's in the wrong place.
Right.
So surely, like, nobody's gonna listen to this.
Well, the problem is that people do listen to it. So the bishops are asserting their will in many ways across the country. We've seen increased political activity from them. They don't even shy away. What often happens is that women have no idea that there is an alternative.
Ectopic pregnancies, I mean, it sounds so crazy, but okay, so that's one example.
Sure.
What else related to, in other things related to reproductive health? You said no contraception, no tubal ligation.
Fertility treatments. Basically, the bishops believe, and there's Catholic theology to support this notion, that sex isn't good unless it's done for the purpose of procreation. And there's lots of documents that people can read if they want to dive into this a little bit further.
Don't tell my husband this.
Yeah,
okay?
It makes for fascinating reading. And one of the things that I often tell people is, I've been married for 23 years, and I don't think I've ever had sex in a way the bishops would approve.
So don't tell your husband either, huh?
Right. Apparently being on birth control is, and I have been throughout my married life, that is something that the bishops think is immoral. So my sex life has always been immoral because I'm one of those people who's always been very careful and intentional about pregnancy.
Most people would say that is ethical, right? Being intentional about whether you bring a child into the world, making such a momentous decision in a way that is thoughtful, that is about asking whether this is the right time, whether this is the right circumstance.
We know so much about the well-being of the mother being so crucial to how well a child does in society. So if a girl gets pregnant in high school, there's only a 2% chance that she'll go on and get a college degree by the age of 30. We need for our young women to be on birth control until such time as it makes sense for them to have children. And that's a decision that they should make, but they should make it consciously. And we should support their right to make it consciously.
So these Catholic hospital mergers, really the big problem is about reproductive health.
It's not. It's a huge problem, but it's not the only problem. And there's another huge area that people I've talked to are hugely concerned about. Here in Washington State, by a large margin, I think it was 59%, we approved the Death with Dignity Act. In some cases, it was as high as 75%. So what the ethical and religious directives of the bishops forbid is any participation with Death with Dignity. And so what happens in Catholic facilities is that they won't even tell you anything about the law. They won't tell you that it exists. They won't tell you how to exercise your rights under the law. They just pretend it doesn't happen, and they forbid their staff and physicians to participate at all.
How about patient directives?
Oh.
You know, don't resuscitate me, no feeding tubes, no extraordinary measures.
Right. Patient directives are absolutely fine as long as they don't conflict with Catholic dogma.
So you're saying the bishop's directives trump the patient's directives.
Absolutely, absolutely. And one of my other favorite directives, I like to call it the Terri Schiavo directive. After the Terri Schiavo case, where most of us were appalled that somebody could be kept on a feeding tube long after it seemed to make sense, given what her husband said this woman wanted and just her belief system, it's just crazy that the bishops, in essence, doubled down and said that when someone's in a persistent vegetative coma, regardless of whether they've signed any directive, regardless of how many people it's been witnessed by, the requirement in a Catholic hospital is that that patient be kept on a feeding tube.
That would be a violation of my ethics.
Oh,
to
absolutely.
Say that resources that could be going to take care of a poor, sick child or to, I mean, there's so many other things those resources could do.
Part of it, a lot of people don't understand the reasons behind all of this, but there is a concept in Catholic theology about suffering, where suffering is seen as a very good thing because suffering brings you closer to God. And that's fine on a personal level if that's what you believe.
But we're talking about public institutions.
Like, right.
We're talking about the University of Washington.
I know.
Just
I know.
Proposed an affiliation with a Catholic system.
I know. It scares me to think that the University of Washington would ever think suffering's a good idea.
Most of us think suffering is bad.
Right. I'm one of those people who absolutely does not want to suffer. I can't stand pain. And it's one of the first things I always tell a doctor. So
absolutely. Love, joy, peace.
That's good.
You know, happiness. Yeah. All good.
Right.
Pain, bad.
Right, right. And so anything that you can do to alleviate pain and suffering, I think, is a positive contribution. But ultimately, really what this amounts to is it should be the patient's choice. It should be the patient's right.
What can people do about this?
So we're at a point right now where there are a lot of policymakers who need to figure out how we transition from the boiling frog situation that we've been in, where we've allowed these Catholic institutions to become such an integral part of our healthcare system. We are going to have to extricate ourselves from that, being mindful of the Constitution, being mindful of the fact that it's illegal to spend public money towards a religious mission. And given that these are healthcare ministries and they absolutely have a religious mission, it seems pretty clear cut to me. So you should speak out to your public officials and encourage them to move quickly to get us to a point where patient rights are honored.
Are there specific officials? Are there specific places they can go?
Two most important players in this are Governor Jay Inslee and Attorney General Bob Ferguson. They pull the policy levers that are going to be so critical as this conversation and debate and transition move forward.
And the ACLU of Washington, you said, is leading the charge from an
yes.
advocacy standpoint. I understand they have a web page up. It's ACLU-WA, is that right?
Right. If you do a search for ACLU of Washington, you'll find the website, and people can contribute their stories. They've got an excellent PowerPoint presentation.
You say they have a form for people to tell their own stories if there's
right.
been religious interference
right.
in their healthcare decision-making.
Right, right. And they are hearing interesting stories all the time, and I do expect this to be litigated because our constitutional rights are so important and they cannot be ignored just because some people think it's convenient.
You've had religious interference in your healthcare decisions, either in your private clinic with your doctor or in a hospital setting. It sounds like now is the time to talk about it.
We want that change to be one where patient rights are honored in all hospitals receiving public funding.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us.
And thank you for having me.